Welcome to Federal Insights for February, Emerging Trends in Federal Data Analytics, sponsored by Alteryx.
In their rush to find and appoint chief data officers, federal agencies are late to the game. The first industry CDO got the job back in 2002. Companies have learned a few lessons, starting with the need to define what exactly an organization wants the data officer to do, and how to measure results. Those findings from a survey of large organizations by New Vantage Partners could help federal agencies avoid CDO pitfalls. For more, we turn to Babson College Management and IT Professor Tom Davenport. Professor Davenport, good to have you on.
Happy to be here.
Now, you were kind of a co-conspirator in this survey by New Vantage Partners. What did you find in surveying companies that have CDOs? What are their biggest issues?
Well, I think there are two big issues. One is that despite some progress in the use of data and technology in organizations, of course, and trillions of dollars spent, most organizations say they still don't have a data-driven organization. They don't have a data-driven culture. Many of them say that human and process, business process issues are the primary problem. Very few say that technology is the problem. So I think we need to kind of shift some of our attention in that regard. And then there doesn't seem to be any consensus about what kind of person you need as a chief data officer. Equally split almost between an external change agent and or somebody who understands the organization well and can help to transform it from inside, and relatively small percentages saying that they think the job is working well. I think 27% said it's working well in their organization. So I think a need for focus and a need for some change in the role.
Give us a little history here. What type of organization was the first to have a chief data officer, and what did they expect that person to do back then?
Yeah, so the earliest CDOs were in banks. Capital One named the very first, and most large banks had named them within a few years. And the initial focus was, to use a sports analogy, on defense. It was, how do we prevent breaches and hacks of our data? How do we address any regulatory issues? How do we just not get in trouble with data? Since then, I think a couple of things have happened. One, many financial services organizations have realized that this defense-related issue is important enough, so we should have somebody, an executive who specializes in it. So we have all these chief information security officers that have been named. And organizations more and more realize the value of an offense-oriented approach to data, you know, scoring points, if you will, with data. So making customers happy and selling more of what you're offering to them, and basically making your business perform better. And so I think the shift from defense to offense has been a pretty marked one over the last decade or so.
And so you found that at this point, about two-thirds of the organizations you surveyed do have a CDO. And what I found interesting is that you've, based on the research, based on what you were talking to them about, there are actually seven possible jobs that a chief data officer can do. And they're not all mutually exclusive, but nobody can do all of them. Run us through quickly what the seven possibilities are.
Sure. So I think the emerging, most popular definition of the role is a combination of data and analytics, a chief data and analytics officer, as they're called in many organizations. And a lot of companies have decided, well, that's the best way to harness these possibilities of offense, not just kind of managing the data internally, but figuring out how you use it to create more insights through analytics and artificial intelligence and so on. So that one, I think, is growing most rapidly. Certainly in the private sector, there's an interest in monetizing data. You have organizations, for example, like General Motors, that have a ton of data on vehicle locations through technologies like OnStar. And so monetizing that data, figuring out how to make more money with it is very important. So we call that data entrepreneur. It's basically building new businesses around data. That one is tough, as it turns out, particularly in a time like this one, where more and more consumers are a bit worried about data ownership and privacy issues. Then you have what we call the data developer. It's somebody who takes responsibility for developing data and analytics intensive applications. So the brokerage firm Morgan Stanley developed an application for recommending the next best thing that an investor customer should do. And that was a good example of that focus, you know, really trying to get a quick and meaningful win from data and analytics. Then you have the data defender role that's more oriented to the defense issues I mentioned, security, preventing breaches and hacks, regulatory issues, and so on. That in many cases has been superseded by the appointment of these chief information security officers, but certainly not totally. You have the data architect role, the fifth one we identified, which is really making sure that data is accessible, that it's integrated, that it's of high quality, that it doesn't get duplicated too much within organizations. And that's just really a hard row to hoe, generally speaking. It's particularly in large, I was with a very large investment bank yesterday. They said they have been able to count 130,000 different databases within their organization. So you can imagine that rationalizing all of that is a very difficult thing to do. So there's been a little bit of retreat from that role as organizations realize just how difficult it was.
Yes, plus you've got the business units that want to husband that data, and they may not want to turn it over to generalized corporate use.
They may not even want to share it for any purpose, exactly. You have, there was a movement called data governance, which has attempted to get people on the non-technology side of the organization to manage data effectively. I mean, they're the ones who prosper if it's done well and who suffer if it isn't. But data governance has also proved to be a difficult thing. It's hard to get people on the business side interested in managing data. They think it's, you know, the technology side's responsibility, and hard to change people's behavior in that regard. So that one has suffered a little bit as well, but you still hear people talking about it. One chief data officer at a large credit card company told me, well, we still try to do that, but we don't call it data governance. Nobody likes the term governance. And then finally, there's the data ethicist role that I think will become more and more important. The one prominent example we found of it is at MasterCard, where the chief data officer is primarily focused on that role. She's a lawyer. She has ethics and privacy-oriented background, but not too many organizations have created that yet. Maybe they will in the future as we become more interested in the ethics of data.
And what's your sense that might be the best role for a chief data officer in the public sector, in the federal sector? You mentioned nobody likes the word governance. Actually, government loves that word. You'd never go to a conference without hearing it.
Yeah, well, I think it's still going to be hard in the public sector to do that. I would argue for the chief data and analytics officer version of the role in government as well, because if you're focusing on all these kind of architecture and governance issues, one, it's really difficult, I think, to get the funding for those things from executives and policymakers who don't really understand exactly what the problem is and what technologies might be able to help solve it. So it's probably not going to be a recipe for a long-term career if you focus on those things. On the other hand, if you focus on data and analytics, you can provide some, you know, offense-oriented value. You can make constituents happy with some applications that give them more insight into, I don't know, what their retirements might look like, or what their tax dollars are going for, or how those dollars can be spent more efficiently through the use of analytics. So I think that's a much safer direction for chief data officers to go in than some of the other ones we identified.
Tom Davenport is management and IT professor at Babson College. Time for a quick break. When we come back, Davenport lays out the kind of experience one would need to fill the role of a chief data officer. I'm Tom Temin.
Every agency is looking to propel their organizations forward with AI and machine learning, but many have not considered what shape their data is in. After all, garbage in is garbage out. From messy data to actionable insight, the Alteryx Analytics platform provides a code-free, code-friendly environment that clears your path to advanced analytics with geospatial, predictive, and machine learning. With Alteryx, you can accelerate the quality and insights within your data, getting to the thrill of solving more quickly and efficiently. Visit Alteryx.com/AI to learn more.
We're speaking with Tom Davenport, professor of management and information technology at Babson College. And for chief data officers themselves, what types of background tend to point to someone who's going to be good at this? Should they be highly technical? Should they be imaginative in how data might be used? I mean, what's the best kind of person?
Well, somebody I was, I was with a group of chief data officers yesterday, and one of them said, what you're really looking for is somebody who knows how to create organizational transformation. That's not typically a terribly technical background that creates the ability to do that. I think we started out with the idea that these jobs need to be very technical, but more and more, I think the ability to translate between the requirements of the organization in terms of data and analytical capabilities and the ability to provide those capabilities, many of them coming from the technology organization, is a useful step. You know, I noticed in some of the early appointments of government CDOs that they were reporting to chief technology officers. In general, in the private sector, people are starting to say that's not a good idea, that then you end up only focusing on the technology issues. You don't change the culture at all. You don't get more decisions made on the basis of evidence, which I think was the original intent back when the government CDO requirement was created. It was evidence-based policymaking was the idea behind it. So that's not going to happen if you just put a highly technical person in the role.
Sure. And when you talk in terms of organizational transformation, that's a very difficult thing to define. And transformation can't really happen until somebody at the top decides what it's going to look like on the other end, which is not the CDO or the CIO or really anyone else but except the CEO, ultimately.
Exactly. You know, and obviously our CEO in the current federal government is not a terribly, you can say what you like about him, but he's not a terribly data-driven decision maker. So it may be challenging, I think, to create massive data-oriented transformation in any agency right now, but I think you can still take some steps in that direction. You can use evidence and analytics and data to make some key decisions about where you deploy resources and agencies rather than doing it by your gut, which, you know, turns out not to be a terribly successful way to make most decisions.
And can the CDO maybe help more directly with technical transformation? Because the transformation of IT is something a lot of organizations are chasing right now because of new technologies and what they enable, and because they want to stay ahead of what customer demand might be.
Yeah, I think certainly they can be a partner in that process. I think the best function they could play is to provide insights from the business side of the organization about what people are really looking for in terms of data, what kinds of data would provide most value to the organization, what ways could it be curated and transformed to make it more useful for key decisions. So really, you know, there's so much data in organizations, including government organizations. I think putting some prioritization into the process would be a very helpful thing in any, you know, kind of technology transformation.
And in the research that you did with new venture partners, were there any organizations that really stood out as getting it with respect to data and chief data officers? And what might the lessons learned from those be?
Well, I think there are some successful ones. It's still, you know, relatively early days to evaluate it over the long term. But as I mentioned, some of the ones in financial services are quite successful. I wrote also with Randy Bean from New Vantage Partners a little piece about JP Morgan Chase and their chief data and analytics officer. GM, I think, is moving in the right direction. It's a challenge, and they're doing, I'm trying to do both a monetization thing and a lot of work on analytics, but their CDO came from Wells Fargo and was at USAA before that, got a lot of experience Capital One, you know, the first organization to designate a chief data officer, has always been very sophisticated in terms of its use of analytics to, you know, pinpoint who should get what marketing materials and figure out what interest rate to charge. And now they're quite successful in the use of artificial intelligence. They have over 1,000 AI projects within the organization. So those would be some pretty good examples of organizations that have gotten pretty far with data and analytics, in part because of their chief data officers.
Yeah, I was going to get to artificial intelligence. This is something agencies feel like they need to do, and they talk about it a lot. And there are some projects going on. There's some real money going toward artificial intelligence, especially in the Defense Department. But it always comes back to selecting the proper data in order to properly train your algorithms and to make sure they work as they're supposed to and don't introduce bias. So the acquisition and selection of data then becomes an important part of an AI program. Is that a good place for the chief data officer to have a big role?
It is, as you suggest, particularly for machine learning, which is the most common branch of AI these days. You know, your models don't get intelligent unless you have good data on which to train them. And so more and more important, I think, to assess what kind of data you might have to create some intelligent models. That data has to be labeled. We have to know the outcome. So you make sure you have some outcomes for your data as well. Did that person get sick? Something that you need to know if you're going to train a model to predict whether a person will get sick. And chief data officers, I think, can play an important role in overseeing the process of providing data for AI initiatives. There are some AI projects like, you know, chatbots and so on that don't require typically a huge amount of data, but machine learning is at the core if you're going to do any prediction, and that does require a lot of data.
Tom Davenport is professor of management and information technology at Babson College. I'm Tom Temin.
Every agency is looking to propel their organizations forward with AI and machine learning, but many have not considered what shape their data is in. After all, garbage in is garbage out. From messy data to actionable insight, the Alteryx Analytics platform provides a code-free, code-friendly environment that clears your path to advanced analytics with geospatial, predictive, and machine learning. With Alteryx, you can accelerate the quality and insights within your data, getting to the thrill of solving more quickly and efficiently. Visit alteryx.com/AI to learn more.
My guest is Tom Davenport, professor of management and information technology at Babson College. And earlier you said that in some models that haven't worked that well, the CDO might have been initially seen as someone serving the CIO or the technology function. It strikes me that maybe the CDO could be served by the CIO in the sense that as you choose all these data sets for whatever project, whether it's AI or digital services, many times those data sets are not solely in the given organization. And even if they are, they may not have the same structures and origins. So you've got this idea of the API interface between your programs, your applications, and your data. And to organize all of that, that's really a CIO function, but that would be in service of the vision that the CDO would see.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of debate about should CDOs report to CIOs. Some are adamantly opposed to it. I've seen in some cases it's worked relatively well. But in general, I think the CDO ought to have a closer tie to the business. And I was listening to someone from the Enterprise Data Management Council yesterday. It's a collection of large organizations that survey about these issues, and I think 29% of CDOs are now reporting to chief executive officers. A good chunk are also reporting to chief operations officers. So I think there is a movement to have CDOs report someplace other than to technology executives.
Now, you teach management and information technology at Babson, which is probably the least known good business school going around in the country. And
well, we're known for entrepreneurship. We always win number one in entrepreneurship at Babson.
Yeah, not to be confused with Bentley, which is for the accountants up the road there.
Exactly. Yeah.
But in some sense, it's nothing new for a business to be driven by data. I mean, I've read stories of when Robert S. McNamara ran Ford. All he would do is read the green and white printout sheets, and he could derive wisdom from stacks of numbers that the old mainframe spit out. What is different now? It seems like data is more democratized, and it applies to many more business functions than it used to.
It does. I mean, I think McNamara was one of the early data-driven executives. Sadly, we don't still have quite as many of those as we would like, but you know, we have a lot more data now. We have a lot more ability to digest it. I've spent a lot of my time over the last 20 years writing about analytics, big data, and now artificial intelligence, and it really gives us the ability to make much more decisions predicting the future rather than looking back at the past. It gives us the ability to interpret non-standard forms of data, not just rows and columns of numbers, but we can start to interpret text and images and all sorts of interesting new types. So unfortunately, the human side hasn't quite kept up with the technology advances that we've made.
Yeah, so it sounds like the big technical development here is greater use of unstructured data. That's been a holy grail probably for 25 years. But maybe with AI, we're on the verge of that coming into the whole evidence and data-driven picture, sounds like.
That's true. And just the vast increase in the amount of data that we have. You know, we have tons of data from mobile devices. We have massive amounts of data coming now from sensors in industrial equipment. Our cars are getting equipped with more and more sensors, so airplanes. So I think figuring out how to digest and make sense of all of that is going to be critical for every organization over the next decade or so.
Tom Davenport is Professor of Management and Information Technology at Babson College. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
You can find this episode online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for February, Emerging Trends in Federal Data Analytics, sponsored by Alteryx on Federal News Network.
Every agency is looking to propel their organizations forward with AI and machine learning, but many have not considered what shape their data is in. After all, garbage in is garbage out. From messy data to actionable insight, the Alteryx Analytics platform provides a code-free, code-friendly environment that clears your path to advanced analytics with geospatial, predictive, and machine learning. With Alteryx, you can accelerate the quality and insights within your data, getting to the thrill of solving more quickly and efficiently. Visit alteryx.com/AI to learn more.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Of course.
Who's asking? I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like. Consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, 1 in 4 people 65 and older will experience a fall. And many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home. So take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors. And install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.